I've kind of touched on the subject in the past of anxiety and mental health things, but I really want to get more in depth and kind of tell my story about growing up with anxiety and the problems that I've had.
Hey everybody, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show is about commercial art, making a good living and making great art. Is it possible? We're trying to figure that out. It's a tough game. We're in it together. Let's look into it, okay? You can, thanks to our syndicate, Illustration Age, you can find this show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Let's jump into the show. This episode is supported by In the Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In the Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In the Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support. Really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Okay, so today on the show, we interview the one, the only, Gemma Carell. Oh my goodness, this is a serious treat. Gemma does not do a lot of these types of things. This is her first podcast interview, and you are going to love her. Gemma is a British illustrator who has recently moved to the U.S. You might have seen her t-shirt, Pugs Not Drugs, or her many, many amazing, hilarious cartoons all over the internet. She's, you know what? She's one of the most successful illustrators of our time. This lady has like almost 70,000 followers on Twitter, 300,000 followers on Instagram, and by talking to her, you would never know it. She's so humble and so hilarious, and I think she has some real insight in what it looks like to get to that level, some of the struggles, some of the good things, some of the tips to how to kind of unearth your voice, and I think you're going to just really, really love this. If you haven't already, go check her work out. You will not regret it. She has got such a strong voice, and she's so hilarious. Thanks, Gemma, for being on the show. Let's get in. Just a quick note, this is one of the interviews that I interviewed live at Icon Conference, which was a fantastic time, I must say. It was great to sit down in person and do this interview. You will hear a little bit of clanking at some points because this bad baby was recorded in the real world. So be aware, that's what's going on.
first question. First, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. But my first question is, what are you most excited about in the stuff that you're making right now?
So probably that I'm working on more personal projects at the moment and actually making them happen, I've spent a few years working very, very hard on client-based projects, and you know, I've just moved to the US, so like I had to work super hard to get the visa and to get the money to move over here. And now that I'm a bit more settled, I really want to start on my own. I want to write my own book. I mean, I've already done like
a bunch of books.
A lot of books, yeah, yeah. But like a really personal, like I want to clear the time in my schedule just to write this book, which I've never done before.
Do you
want
to talk about what it is?
So it's going to be a kind of memoir-ish type thing. I've done a lot of diary work. Well, I do like a diary every day pretty much in my sketchbook.
Yeah.
And it's the way that I enjoy working the most and that I work in the most naturally. And I've kind of touched on the subject in the past of anxiety, and I've really made a lot of comics about it, and mental health things, but I really want to get more in depth and kind of tell my story about growing up with anxiety and the problems that I've had, because you know, I've had some pretty severe issues which people might not necessarily realize.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's really been explored in comic form before.
Yep.
This particular kind of facet of anxiety. So that's the plan. Diaries about anxiety.
I love that. That's amazing. And I have people close to me that have had really serious anxiety problems and panic attacks and all kinds of stuff. And I think when you're removed from it, I don't mind that, whatever. This is the ambiance of the conference.
Right.
But we're at Icon.
We're in like a real...
Yeah.
This is real life.
Yeah, this is real. you know, I think when you're removed from it, that it's really hard to... If you're someone who doesn't struggle with anxiety, it's really hard to even understand it or believe it,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between worry and anxiety. And I feel like at the moment, anxiety is a very almost trendy
buzzword
subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still anxiety, obviously, if you're worrying about going to parties and you're an introvert and stuff, which I am as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of the problems I've had in the past are like, can't leave the house,
mm-hmm,
having panic attacks every day kind of problems,
yeah,
which is a whole other
different thing completely
spectrum, and it's not something that you're like, that you can really joke about at the time, although
yes,
I probably will joke right about it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And that's, you know, I think it's really powerful, and my wife actually noticed those themes in your work and like, mm-hmm, really took a lot away from it.
I feel like I've been sharing more and more as the years have gone on, and it's scary, you know, to share something really personal, but I found that in general people react very well to it, and there's a lot of people who can empathize with problems and who get something back from it.
Yes.
I mean, it's still very scary, and it's like bearing your soul to people who already know you, who maybe don't know everything about you,
mm-hmm,
like, and like my parents are going to read it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
yeah,
it's scary. That's difficult.
Yeah. I think that's what people like, is authenticity, relatableness. I mean, recently I kind of went through a bit of creative block. I think I kind of burned out. I'd just been working too hard. And
yeah,
like with the move here, a few incredibly stressful things happened, such as leaving my passport on the plane, which meant that I wasn't allowed to leave Frankfurt Airport.
You almost had to set camp.
I almost had to live in Frankfurt Kentucky. Airport.
Is that Kentucky?
No, in Germany.
Oh, in France. Oh, I thought you meant France.
Yeah. Oh. No, Kentucky at least would be in the US.
Yeah, you were like, halfway there. Yeah,
like in transit with my dogs. And it was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
And yeah, so all these stressful things happened. And I was just like burnt out on illustration. And I felt like I couldn't come up with any new ideas. I was trying to make comics and they just weren't working at all. And I was beginning to think like, I'm just going to quit and I'm going to do something that actually helps other people. Mm. Like, before I kind of almost fell into becoming an illustrator, well, not exactly, I mean, I fell into going to art college. I was going to be a teacher, I was going to be a nurse, or I was going to study psychology or become a counsellor. And I still kind of want to do those things. I want to help other people. And so I guess... But I don't have any real skills apart from drawing. So yeah. If I can help people by drawing, then that's what I want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I just wanted to say that we had this instance where when I was getting my wife's visa, they sent us home a pack at like after we'd gone to the embassy and everything. Mm-hmm. And we opened it up and then only to find that like on pretty small print on the back, it said, if you open this, it will be invalid. Like, we had to bring it to the U.S. Embassy, like, on the other side of the trip, and it had to be sealed. And so we had to go through the process again. It was ridiculous. Yes. There's a billion little things like that. It was
They don't make
painful.
It easy.
They don't make it easy at all. That's really funny. So I know we talked a little bit about it, but I'd like to talk about it more. So what brought you to the States? I know that like you wanted to do it for a long time. I feel like even like early times that we had talked on the internet, you'd mentioned
I feel like you were one of the people that I was always like, every time I spoke to you, I'd be like, I'm gonna move to America next year. And then it didn't happen. And I've wanted to live in the US forever, pretty much. I really love it here, and I figured that I'd find a way eventually. And so I ended up getting a visa, which is a 3-year visa, which I can then extend yearly. I can really work anywhere because, you know, I just need a desk and some drawing materials. But if I'm going to work anywhere, I want to work in sunny California where I can hang outside with my dogs and get iced coffee every day.
And you're in Oakland, right?
Oakland, yeah.
Yeah, and you like it there?
Yeah, I love it.
That's awesome. Did you think that, in terms of career, did you think that your career would be easier to pursue here?
Not really. I mean, if any of the US immigration people are listening to this, then yes, I definitely needed to be here to do this work. That's the basis of my visa application. But I mean, I'm not really doing any more work. In fact, I'm probably doing slightly less work here because I'm actually going outside and enjoying myself instead of just being stuck inside all day. I mean, it's helpful in some ways. I've always mostly worked with American companies and publishers anyway. And obviously it's all through email, but now I can actually go and see art directors, and I can come to things like Icon and comic fairs and so on. I'm going to San Diego Comic-Con at the end of the month.
Cool.
I guess it is helpful.
And maybe not easier, but maybe more natural of a home for your work and what you're doing.
Yeah,
I thought that might be the case. What about healthcare and all of that stuff? I'm sure that has not been a fun time. I have 3 kids. My healthcare is out of control.
I can imagine.
It's not a good time. What was that like, navigating that as a freelancer?
It was tricky. It was stressful to start off with because there's just so many options and I'm not used to it at all. Like in the UK, it's just, you just take it for granted, like the NHS. But, I mean, I know I have friends who live in the US, and I spoke to a couple of them about the healthcare they use, and what I might want to, which kind of providers I might want to use myself. And so we worked it out. And, you know, it's an extra cost that you don't have to pay in the UK. But on the other hand, there's certain taxes that you don't have to pay here that you do in the UK. So it kind of evens out in the end.
I think initially it's like a pretty big shock. And I think when I started freelancing in the UK, and that was like a lot, that made it a lot easier initially. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're like earning under a certain threshold in the UK, it's like pretty easy. But now as you became more successful and more known, was that an exciting process for you, or do you feel like it gets in the way of what you're doing? I'm just kind of interested in knowing, like, from your perspective, someone who's like an introvert, making really personal work, and then having so many eyeballs and feedback and all this stuff. I just wonder if how much of it is positive, how much is negative, all that stuff.
So in a way, I don't really think about it because it's kind of removed. Because it's the internet.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't, I mean, I see the figures and they're there abstractly, like the numbers are on my Instagram and so on. But so it's all, it doesn't really matter to me, to be honest. I would do the same work if I had 100 followers or if I had 100,000 followers.
Yeah.
And it's positive in the sense that I have a lot of followers, and that means that I have a lot of people buying, hopefully buying my books and so on. The most negative aspect is probably the fact that my work gets stolen a lot, which can be kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
Either just stolen in the sense of all the kind of, you know, all the meme accounts that just like take your work and cut your name off and post it on their stupid account.
Yeah.
Or people literally taking my image and putting it on a t-shirt or whatever and telling it.
What about that is the most aggravating?
It's just the kind of principle of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care about, like, most of the stuff is just made in China, like super cheap.
Yeah.
Pillow covers and stuff, and people making those things probably make no money. They're probably in terrible conditions, which I hate. Like, I hate the whole aspect of fast fashion and all that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But I personally don't care about making money from it. It's just the principle of you work really hard to come up with ideas, and then it's like in a split second someone can just
take it away.
Yeah.
I know you've had so many cases of that. Have you had to, like, you have a lawyer now?
I personally don't, but I have a company that makes most of my products, called Idea in the UK, and they have lawyers and they
take care of stuff.
Take care of stuff, which is actually great now, because before I was doing it myself and it was very stressful. Now I feel like I can at least just send it on to them and then stop thinking about it.
Yeah. Are you someone who likes to retell your experiences? Like, is that like a big part of, like, do you do that with your, is Anthony your husband?
Mm-hmm.
All right, your husband. And like, is that just something innate in you? Like, that you want to retell what's going on, or?
Not necessarily. I just like to record things so that I can remember them. Because I feel like I'm not that present when things are actually happening. Like this whole trip, when I get back to Oakland, if someone asks me about it, I won't remember like anything.
Yeah.
Whereas because I'm making a diary, I will actually remember, and it helps me process what's happening to me. And like, I've always made diaries like this, like since I was a kid.
Even with drawings and stuff?
Yeah, I always had like old notebooks that I would fill up with drawings and notes. Like at school, I couldn't take in a lecture just by hearing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to write it down and draw pictures and then go back over it.
Yeah.
So I retell everything to myself more than to anyone else.
Right. I love that. That's so interesting. Are you sentimental about things?
Yeah.
Do you like to look back on your diaries and stuff?
Yeah, once in a while I do, and there'll be things that I've completely forgotten about, and especially travel diaries.
Yeah.
Like, it's so nice to remember.
Do you get sad about time passing?
Not really. Only if it's a person or a pet that is not around anymore.
Yeah, right. That's, I understand that. You know, one thing I think that's interesting about you is that I think in the commercial arts, and then just in art in general, I think that most artists are, you know, kind of learn from masters, you know, take a lot of different inspirations from things, combine things. It takes a long process of like coming up with your own really unique thing. But I feel like for you that... I mean, do you feel like you went through that process?
Yeah, okay. I feel like I did. I mean, at art college, my style completely evolved then. But because I've been drawing forever, I have always used the same kind of style since I was a kid. Like, when I was 6 years old, I was reading, well, not reading as much as just looking at the pictures in my dad's Far Side cartoon annuals. And so, I mean, you can still see the influence of that now in my work.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, I've learned about a lot of different cartoonists and artists at art school, which really sped up the process of me finding my own style.
It's just funny because I think of, about every once in a while, I feel like you see someone who either, I mean, one of the ways that I think it happens is just doing something very... naturally from an early age without thinking about judging it and just being it who you are, that there's a part of that that makes it more pure and more unique. And that's why I think, like, I can't think of very many people that do work like you and or have the voice that you have. And I think that that's got to be a big part of why it's been so explosive. And I do you see yourself more as a cartoonist or an illustrator, or does it matter? Maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't know if it really matters. I guess I would say cartoonist just because I use words. I would say illustration is more decorative, cartoonist is more narrative, and I definitely err on the narrative side.
Yeah,
but I mean, I do illustrations without text as well, so
you do some decorative stuff and
all kinds of
different things. But you do usually have like a specific point of view on any given thing that you do that's pretty obvious and usually has some kind of written component.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So we've talked a little bit about this, but what do you struggle with now? Like, what's a new struggle with your art that... that you're only going through? I know you talked a little bit about getting burnt out.
Yes.
How did you come out of that?
I just had to take things slow for quite a while.
Yeah.
And obviously I had work that I had to get done, but I didn't really make much personal work for quite a while, or anything extra than what I had to do. And I just spent time... I mean, it's when I just moved, so I just spent a lot of time exploring the city and all the new things, just walking outside, and then kind of doodling in my sketchbook with no kind of path in mind, which I kind of do anyway. Like, I use my sketchbook a lot, and I don't have anything particular that I want to achieve in there. It's just getting my thoughts out on paper. But this was really, really kind of like just working it out on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a few months and I'm sort of now getting back into it. I think I just needed a little time to
little break.
Slow down, yeah.
Has Do you think that, how long have you been in Oakland?
About 9 months.
Okay. Do you notice any changes in your work since you moved?
I think that my work is slightly more positive now.
Yeah.
Although when I was feeling kind of burnt out, I noticed that my comics, I did a lot of comics that were like about nihilism and
yeah.
like really kind of almost dark comics. And yeah, I feel like I am getting a little more positive now and just more open, which comes from feeling more positive.
Mm-hmm. Like, it just follows your mood and where you're going.
Yeah, I'm not like an artist who does well from like, I'm not like the typical artist who's like depressed and like makes masterpieces from that misery.
Yeah.
Like if I'm miserable, then I can't work.
Yeah, I'm like that too. I actually like am way more productive when I'm in a healthy
yeah,
state of mind.
For sure.
Yeah, and what do you think I have a lot of things that I want to ask you. What role does comedy play in your life now? Do you consume a lot of comedy? Is that a big deal to you?
I mean, I don't think I like comedy any more than the next person. I like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watch comedy shows like Amy Schumer, but I'm not a huge comedy fan. And I don't laugh easily, not because I have no sense of humor, just because
I'm
an introvert and I wouldn't say high taste.
No, just that like it's hard to get you it takes a particular.
There's definitely a particular style that I like.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm more into just, I love to research things and reading, not comedy or humor books at all. Like I'm more into nonfiction and like history books, and I just like to pick a subject and learn everything there is to know about it.
Yeah. Are you, have you always been kind of into history?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do feel like there's like this thing of like retelling, capturing, like, you know, cataloging. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
That's really fascinating. Which we can circle back to that in a minute. But another thing I wanted to ask you was, did people in your personal life growing up think that you were funny?
No.
'Cause my point is that I think you're super funny. Obviously, thousands of people think you're super funny. And I just think it's, you know, being an introvert and working it out on paper rather than on stage is, I just wonder what your perception of like, whether you, you think you're funny? Do you feel like a funny person?
No, I don't think I'm funny.
But you clearly are super funny.
Growing up, I don't think anyone apart from I had a very small, close group of friends, and they probably would say I was funny.
Right.
Because we had a very particular weird sense of humor. I had these friends and we'd make up musicals, and we made a whole website dedicated to like this salt and pepper shaker set that was in a shop that we worked in, and like all kinds of
like
really
little videos.
Weird. Yeah.
Right.
We were weird. And you know, looking back on it, we were funny, but nobody would have known it because we didn't speak to anybody else.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like recently I posted on Facebook, I think, an article about my work, and it said that I was funny, and my brother was like, what? He grew up in the same house as me, and he would never, ever describe me as funny.
Yeah, that is really funny. And I think, what do you have any other anecdotes that you can tell us about that time and the things that you were making, or any specific weird
so actually my diary making at that time was more collaborative. So I had this group of friends and a couple of us had these diaries and we'd draw in each other's diaries and write little poems and make up little characters. Like me and my friend Rachel wrote an entire musical about cats that were peas. They were pea cats.
They were like.
Like
the vegetable pea?
Yeah, they were petit pois.
I don't know what that is.
Like green beans in a.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Case. That's not the technical term.
Yeah,
a case of beans, but they were cats also, and they lived on an island. And so there was a website, there were animations, this was when the internet was, you know, we didn't have it at home, we only had it at school.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd like, everyone else would be outside in the schoolyard, like doing normal teenage things, and we'd be inside making these GIF animations of cats.
Yeah. That's so funny.
And making music to go with it.
Do you do any collaboration now?
Not much, no. Not because I don't want to, just because. It's just not something that happens.
I just thought it sounds like a really interesting practice that you could do that same thing that you used to do with your friends, like trade journals and stuff. Like mm-hmm. that could be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that would be interesting to you now, but I think it sounds really interesting. Where did you guys get the idea for these journals? Was it just something that happened?
I don't know. I think I already was doing the journaling, and I probably just took it in with me one day, and we were all very shy people, so we obviously had fun with each other, but it opened up a whole extra bit of communication that we could use in class when we weren't meant to be talking or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It just added an extra dimension for our friendship.
Yeah. Did developing a body of work that was like outside of yourself give you like confidence or a peace of mind of like communicating things that you weren't comfortable communicating, like maybe with just words?
Yeah. But I mean, I had those diaries, and then I had my own diaries at home, which I didn't share with anyone.
Right.
But it was a way of working stuff out for myself. But mm-hmm. that was the best way that I knew how to work things out.
And do you still have, like, personal diaries that are drawings and stuff, too?
I do, but I don't have anything so personal that I mean, I have lots of diaries that I haven't shared just because there's so many of them and I don't have time to scan them. And I'm sure nobody wants to see every single thing. But there's nothing so personal that I wouldn't share it anymore.
Right. Really? Like, you mean you just keep that to yourself or you will just share it?
I will just share it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say that there's nothing that I wouldn't share, like, but nothing that's happened to me recently in my personal life that I wouldn't share.
You wouldn't share. So do you feel like you have breakthroughs in your art personally?
Yes. And there is mostly barriers that I put up myself that I then have to knock back down again.
Like what? Do you have any examples of that?
Just things that I think that I shouldn't say. For a while I avoided anything political.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked with the NIB quite a lot last year. That's an online collection of comics, and I did a couple of things which had a feminist bent, I guess. They weren't like overtly feminist, but they had that tone. And then I made a feminist activity book.
I saw that, yeah, that was really good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it was fun to make. And I was worried about making it because, you know, people are used to me drawing pugs and, you know, neutral, fun stuff. And this was like, I'm taking a stance on something now. Mm. But it wasn't really that scary in the end. And I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
And so it was just something that I a barrier put up for myself that I can't do this kind of work, and actually turns out that I can.
Mm. Is that something that you had to like talk through with other people, or was it just like an internal thing? Was
yeah.
it a struggle that you were like, it was an ongoing thing?
Once I did one thing, that was pretty much it.
Mm.
I did it and it went down well among most people, apart from the guys on Twitter that have like MRA in their Twitter bio, who,
yeah.
you know, have some search for hashtag feminist on Twitter. So anything that comes up, they're going to be like, they're going to take it down. But
yeah.
Once I'd done one thing, it was like, oh, this is actually great. And I want to do more of it. And I mean, the book I spoke to the publisher a lot about, and about everything I wanted to get in there, because there's obviously a lot of ground to cover. But yeah, now I feel fairly confident doing that kind of stuff, even though I'm not an expert in any way. And so sometimes I worry about saying the wrong thing because I don't know every facet of every part of feminism.
And that really holds lots of people back from making stuff, feeling like you have
yeah.
to be a complete expert to comment
right.
on anything. Yeah.
Especially because you see people get knocked down for saying the wrong thing. Like someone can be a perfect example of feminism, but they say one small wrong thing and that's it. They're like vilified forever.
Mm.
So yeah, you can see why people would be scared.
Has it been really difficult to navigate like the positive and negative online and the responses that you get?
Yeah.
Okay.
I get a lot of negative response these days, and I know it's part of just my work being seen more.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to not let it bother me so much. Like I went through a phase of where it really bothered me because my work is so personal that it's basically attacking me if you're attacking my work.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just trying my best to ignore it. I actually use the internet a lot less now because I feel it's better for me. I go on there to post things and to answer emails, but I don't hang around on there. Because you do, well, I just end up going into wormhole. Is it a wormhole? A rabbit? Some
I think
kind
it
of
could
hole.
Be either. Definitely, yeah.
Some kind of terrible hole.
Yeah. It could be worms or rabbits.
Yeah. Yeah. And like going and seeking out book reviews and stuff, which can only end badly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a hard temptation, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think was that a struggle as someone who already is predisposed to anxiety to have also people, like, I don't even think that I'm very predisposed to that, but the small amount of negativity, very small, can get to me pretty personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can have 100 positive comments, but one negative comment and that is all you see.
Yeah. And so how do you, have you, is just going on there less is like the main
yeah that's
result.
The only thing that's ever I tried just not just ignoring it, but it would always be in the back of my head, so mm-hmm. now I just try not to see it in the first place.
Yeah. What are I don't know if you really care about it, but just for the fun of it, what's the most like star-studded thing that ever happened to you in terms of your work? I feel like I've seen you share like a handful of things that were like pretty incredible. I don't know if it means anything, but it's still, I guess, kind of funny to talk about.
I mean, I've had a couple of celebrities share my work. Sometimes they share it, but they don't. They're sharing like a meme version, which doesn't have my
so
name
they don't
on.
Credit, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's not their fault.
No.
But Reese Witherspoon shares my work occasionally.
Really?
And she always credits me. She follows me on social media. I think
that's
she's a Pug fan.
Really?
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's, she's mostly there for the pugs, but yeah, she sometimes shares my work, and that's just
don't
like
downplay
crazy.
It. Like, she's there for you.
That's well, so me crazy. And my pugs, were, yeah, you know,
that's awesome.
Part and parcel.
Here's a good one. This is a good, interesting wormhole, rabbit hole, whatever, to go down. Howdy. We're just doing an interview, but you can grab whatever. Do you feel, I know this is like an ego trip thing, right? But let's just do it anyway. Do you feel personally responsible for a pug sensation across the world? Don't answer politely. I think we all know the truth about us.
I don't feel personally responsible, but I feel partly responsible.
Yeah.
That, I mean, the Pugs Not Drugs design that I did, which was now like 6 years ago or something.
Yeah.
It was extremely popular, and pug products have gone up. There's been a lot of pug products being made recently, which I think then in turn helped the growth of pugs as pets.
Yeah.
Which is mostly good, but there's
mixed
also
feelings,
yeah, there's the whole thing of dogs as trends, you know, Chihuahuas like back in the Paris Hilton days.
Yeah.
People get them who don't actually know how to look after them or don't want to really look after them, and
yeah,
they end up in shelters. And you're seeing that with pugs now, that there's people who don't realize that
there are, they can have issues and pets,
yeah, and you know, they're with any dog, they're work and you have to look after them, and
yeah
so in a way I feel responsible for that as well, which like, makes me feel terrible.
Well, I mean, that's probably a burden that is too big for you to have
yeah,
on your shoulders. Yeah,
I guess. And
that's,
I mean,
not your
I
responsibility.
Yeah, I do as much as I can for pug rescues as well. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I try and give back a little bit when I can.
Yeah, and take as many dogs as you can.
I'm not. I would if I was allowed to. Every time I go, yeah. I'm going. Whenever I come to a different city, I usually find the rescue and do an event with them. So on Sunday, I'm doing an event with Austin Pug Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Anthony, my husband, like, I might come back
with
a pug. And he's just like, no. Because he's the one that has to look after it when I then go off on another trip somewhere.
I remember actually, like, I don't remember, did you say it was like 2008 or something? I don't remember when it was that you did that design. But I remember at the time, like, watching you know, your journals and everything, and you're talking about pugs all the time. And I remember mm-hmm. thinking, what's with like pugs? Like I like them, and when I was a kid, I really liked them. But I remember it. No one said no one. It was no thing. There was no like interest in pugs on a global level.
Right.
It wasn't. There was, and I remember just thinking, huh, that's weird that she's so into pugs. But I guess that's just her thing. And then watching that like explode all over the place was like pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it crazy? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this the crazy pug people have always been there. You know,
yeah. They've been waiting for their moment to shine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for their mascots and their leader. Now you get to be the pug leader.
I mean, there's a pug fest in Milwaukee, which I went to this year, which mm-hmm. is incredible. It's been going on for 15 years, so it's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just
that's so
pugs
good.
Were waiting and for their time to shine.
They needed someone to champion the cause. Do you, I think that is really actually on a serious note in terms of art and doing your thing and being yourself. Like, you know, I'm not saying that you should be bitter or anything, but is it kind of hard to watch it become a crazy trend when you legitimately go to the pug fest? You literally legitimately
right.
own a pug. You like, this is something that you actually, it genuinely means something to
mm-hmm.
you. It's not just something that you thought, you know, you jumped on a bandwagon. Like, does that
yeah.
bug you a little bit?
It does a little bit, especially when it's like big chain stores making a ton of pug products. which look nothing like pugs.
Right. I love that that is the concern. Yeah. Like, they don't even look like a pug.
Well, they're just kind of like ugly things, and yeah. Pugs have very specific personalities that you really have to know a pug to capture.
Yeah.
And they're obviously being made by people you don't really know.
Like, they don't understand.
They're just Googling pug photos and drawing whatever comes up.
I love that. That is so awesome. Like, I love that. That they're not capturing it for you, and that's so inauthentic, and that is so funny and awesome. But did that, maybe it was that, maybe it was other things, but was that one of the things that helped you gain confidence in making more personal work? Like, you know, people resonating with something that was, like, deeply unique about you? Did that, was there a time where that started to just happen more because you realized that that worked?
Yeah, I mean, I always shared my personal work, but I think that having just said that I didn't say I hated the internet, but that I avoid the internet. Social media has helped a lot, because things like Instagram, I don't use so much to show my work that I've done for clients. I feel like that's a whole other area. That's where I share, like, just sketches from my sketchbook and personal stuff that otherwise I probably wouldn't have really done much with. I forgot what my point was here.
We're talking about, I'm interested in, like, this idea that you know, going out on your own as and trying to find your own perspective or voice, like, it's, you can learn so much from other people, but that can only take you so far. And so I think there's probably a lot of people that come alongside that and be like, you know what, I kind of like pugs, and so they just draw tons of pugs. But to you, it's like a series, like, it's something that's a part of who you are. And I just wonder if, like, seeing how well that did, whether it caused you to, like, think about, be more self-reflective. And I mean, I guess you're already a very, like, reflective person. But I think it's an interesting thing for other people as a takeaway that, like, that wasn't a casual thing that you just thought, this could be cool.
I think it's definitely important to draw things that you're genuinely excited by or interested in, because it definitely comes across if it's authentic. There's a lot of trendiness in the illustration world, which in part comes from the internet. And I feel kind of lucky in a way that when I went to art college, because I'm so old, the internet was not as widely used then. Like, there were obviously websites and stuff, but it wasn't like that's where you went first. You, like, went, well, I went to the library first, and I read books, and I went to exhibitions, and
I do think we lost some of that, because I've taught some classes in art school, and, like, have seen the lack of how it causes people not to share things with each other. So, like, there's like a lack of, there's a lack of culture. And I don't want to be an old guy being like, I'll tell you what's wrong with these students these days. But the thing, it made me sad just to think that that was missing, and maybe they have something else. But to me, it looked like they were just consuming things online, like, just going through stuff and not experiencing it with anybody else, not really. It's never a big deal to them. It was just like a...
And it's so fast that you never really connect with something for very long. And it's all very on the surface. And it's all very... It's all kind of recent work. So if you're always looking at the most recent stuff and there's no background to it, you're going to have a different level of influence than if you're looking through old work and looking beyond illustration even, and different facets of the creative world.
Yeah, and I think
that feeds the trend thing of like everything being surface level and not internalized and not actually personal. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like cataloging stuff like this to be like, you know, if you want to, I think there's a misunderstanding I think that happens with young artists and then with a lot of artists in general is this idea that if you're their hero and they want to be like you, that the way to get there isn't to copy you, but is to learn how you discovered how to be you. Mm-hmm. And then that they can take something from that.
Yeah.
They don't just draw pugs and now that they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that there's like something to extrapolate there about things that actually viscerally mean something to you, like on a cellular level, mm-hmm. just being honest about that and, mm-hmm. and figuring out it's so, I don't know why it's so hard for some people and, or just in general, to draw things that you like that you don't see other people drawing. Like, there's something about, like, I don't know. It seems like a challenge for some people.
I think that now it's, everything has to be immediate. So you want immediate likes on your Instagram.
Yes.
And if you're drawing stuff that everyone else is drawing because it's popular, then you feel like you're going to get likes. Whereas if you do something unknown and different, then maybe people aren't going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that's what everything revolves around now.
Yes. And do you feel like, so it's more like an investment, it can happen slowly.
Yeah.
Did your like your career taking off, did that feel slow or quick to you?
When it was happening, it felt slow, you know, in the early stages. And now it seems like it's gone right by so fast. I can't believe that I'm where I'm at now. Like, I never, ever thought that I would actually be able to be an illustrator as a career.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I always thought, like, from, you know, when did you graduate university?
2007?
2008. And I was 2008, but we were similar times in the UK, mm-hmm. a similar group of people going in the industry. And I always, you know, really loved everything that you were doing and then were watching. You definitely seemed to become more editorial in everything that you did, just in like adding your own content, mm-hmm. becoming more of like a cartoonist and like watching, even though early on I thought, oh, it's really great. You know, I just kind of thought it was similar to the stuff that I was doing and other, you know, in mm-hmm. in a way that we were like in a similar vein, doing similar things in a movement. And then watching you, it was just really fascinating from the outside to watch you tap into something very different. And then mm-hmm. From the outside just looked super explosive. It's really awesome. And, you know, I think that you deserve all of that stuff that you have, but it's all right.
I think I was doing what I thought I should be doing. And that was my problem throughout art school as well. It was like, what does an illustrator do? And you have this idea in your head of what you should do. And meanwhile, I was making these sketchbooks and diaries just kind of for myself. And then one day my professor saw them and was like, why is this not what you're doing? And I was like, oh, but it's just like stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I still struggle with, is like, this is just stupid stuff. Like
what you do for fun for yourself.
Yeah.
There's like a purity to that, like mm-hmm. making yourself laugh, like the scratch your own itch idea. And like, that's the stuff that ends up resonating with people like mm-hmm. you.
But it's almost like, this is too fun. That I should be allowed to do this. This shouldn't be allowed to be like something I make money out of because I'm enjoying it.
I'm having too much of a good time. Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it was Lisa Hannawalt. I heard her say on a podcast once. She's an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know her work?
Yes.
She's really funny. I think she said that a stumbling block for her will be like she get an editorial job and she instantly goes into, what would an editorial illustrator do? And I do the same thing.
I do it too.
Yeah, rather than like, why did they hire me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just like, it was definitely fascinating to watch from the outside, like mm-hmm. you discovering what your thing was. And I, you know, in a true hipster sense, felt like before it really exploded, my wife and I were like, thought it was super brilliant, really hilarious. And I always thought, man, this is going to be massive. And then even as it was growing, I thought, I just think it's going to get way bigger. So have you thought about doing any would you be open to doing like writing for TV or like doing that writing in that capacity?
Yeah. I mean, I probably would never pursue it myself unless somebody came to me and said, do you want to do it? Because
if you're listening to this,
yeah. I don't think I'd be very good at it, but that's just how I feel about everything. So
I actually think that that's not true. I kept thinking that like, I feel like, I don't know how weird this would be for you, but I feel like your journals and all of that mm-hmm. could easily translate into a TV person,
yeah.
a TV show.
Yeah.
Would you be open to doing that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like what I'm doing now with the book that I want to write and the diaries that I want to publish, yeah, could turn into something, but I don't want to rush it.
No.
Because I really want to get it right this time. Like, I've rushed through the last 9 years since I graduated and done so much, and I really want to slow down and really do what I want now.
Do you have like a outline or a plan or anything for that book already?
Yeah, I pretty much have a plan. I've already written a lot. It's just getting started. That's the big scary part.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think I've taken enough of your time, but I super, super appreciate you doing this. I know that you don't do a lot of stuff like this.
First ever podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome. First ever podcast. That's amazing. Thank you for doing it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, guys, that's another episode in the bank. I hope you had a fantastic time. Don't forget to go follow Gemma Carell all over the internet. You won't regret it. She will make your internet experiences much more enjoyable. Thanks, Gemma. I really, really appreciate it. You are fantastic. Thanks to our syndicate, Illustration Age. You can find this show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and his band Y for the theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and his band Metavari for all the other tunes. I'll be back next week to pump you, well, to pep you out of your mind. But until then, if you do whatever it takes, if you got to go back and listen to old episodes, go check them out, but do whatever it takes to stay pepped up.